We are now turning to our interview with Kim Staden, the director of Trustfall, the Julian Assange film. So I did a pre-record with Kim, and I chatted to him yesterday afternoon, and I started off by asking him about the media's portrayal of Julian Assange. He looks like a kind of a dodgy guy, whereas that's not how he looks in Kim's film, and he actually deals with this right at the start of the film. So I kind of asked him, you know, what was the propaganda agenda, I guess, around Assange to start with?
To basically turn him into a villain, or at least to create doubt around his character, his motives, even his appearance, and it's all a fraud. What we reveal in the film, and what I learned from researching and producing the film, and all the interviews that I did, and all the books that I read, is that Julian Assange is someone that was on a mission to create justice in the world through transparency for governments, through revealing the crimes of the powerful, speeding up the flow of truthful information down to the people, so that for the first time we could have an independent news source that was 100% accurate and would give us an insight into the corruption that exists around the world in these in various governments.
It kind of raises questions about, I guess you can tell people that what they're getting is PR or propaganda or lies or however you want to frame it. It's one thing to know that factually, but I think it still sinks into people anyway, doesn't it? Do you feel like your film is a way of addressing that?
Yeah, absolutely. You know, that his character has been undermined to such a huge degree that most people, until they look into it, they do have this sense that they have already passed judgment on the person. I think Nils Melzer, the former UN Special Rapporteur on Torture, says it best in the film when he explains his journey of understanding, basically, that Assange's lawyers approached him for assistance, being in his role at the United Nations, being involved with assessing cases of torture. And so they were interested in his opinions to do a medical examination of him to see whether he was a victim of psychological torture. And what he explains in the film is that when they first approached him, he felt like he already knew everything about Assange, and he'd already formed a judgment.
Yeah.
But he didn't know where he had this from. And what he started doing was looking into the case with an open mind, and he discovered that there was a lot of dirt, and it wasn't on the side of Assange. It was all on the side of the government.
Yeah, yeah.
So, you know, these smears that have been spread around for so many years, they just continue to perpetuate. They're just recycled by the media, by hack journalists, and we dismantle we debunk those smears early on in the film. And what's revealed and through the course of the film is somebody that was on a mission for justice and has basically been criminalized because he revealed the crimes of other people. He didn't commit any crimes himself.
Yeah, that's the ultimate irony of it. Now, I've been reading...
sorry to interrupt, but you know, there's only one crime that he's guilty of, which is jumping bail. And the only reason that happened is because he was in the embassy trying to avoid being extradited into the hands of the US, and so he couldn't appear at the police. He was meant to check in every day while he was on house arrest. He couldn't because he was trying to avoid being extradited. And so, that was the reasoning for why he was taken to Belmarsh prison. Should have been a 52-week prison sentence, but it turns out he's still there almost 5 years later.
Yeah. Now, I have a question for you specifically. I know that Craig Murray, the former UK ambassador who's been reporting and going to Belmarsh prison to report on what's happening there, there's been consequences for him for reporting on Julian Assange and for allying himself with that, with him. Did you Have there been consequences for you, or is this something you had to consider before you set about making the film?
No, I haven't had any consequences at all. We did have some concerns about that, and each editor that we hired, I warned them that their computer might get hacked, but nothing happened at all. So, you know, touch wood, it's all fine. The film's out, it's been classified, it's out in cinemas.
Yeah.
I think it's too late now for them to stop it in any way.
Yeah.
Because it has officially been classified in Australia, New Zealand and the UK. And when we take it to America, you know, most states of America don't require film classification because of their First Amendment free speech rules.
Yeah.
So it looks like we're all in the clear. And I think the reason that it all happened so smoothly was because I think typically a documentary documents something that's happened. And for a country that's trying to scapegoat somebody and warn whistleblowers and sort of create this whole scare campaign, a fear campaign amongst the journalistic community, they probably think that a documentary will just, it's just another documentary that's actually playing into that strategy. They didn't expect a film that is going to really shock people, stir their emotions, and inspire them to take action.
Mm. So you've been going to, you've been holding Q&A sessions for the screenings in Australia where you are?
A few. We can't do that. We've stopped doing that because the sessions are becoming too many. And we didn't try to do that at everyone. We just did a few, you know, mainly the premieres at the big cities, London, Brisbane, Melbourne, and so on. And, it just took off so quick. And now we've had, I've lost count of how many sessions, but it's at least 800, maybe getting towards 1,000 sessions of the film already.
This is your first film, it says, and you've been getting awards for, or getting nominated for awards for new director and things like that. How did this all come about for you, that you decided to make this film? And I know from people who do filmmaking, usually you need to have made a film so you've got something to show people, so you can get, you know, like you've got some high powered people doing the narration, for example. How did all that sort of fall into place for you?
It's a funny story. It'll surprise you. You know, the film did win a couple of awards already, and we didn't really spend much time on the festival circuit, only a few months, because we were in a hurry to get the film out and spread awareness to help Julian Assange. But the festivals that we did enter, we got a terrific result, and that was quite a surprise and very, very gratifying. But the project started out, it was going to be just a simple YouTube documentary. I've never made a documentary before. I've just dabbled around with little videos on iMovie and YouTube and for many years, and thought about making a documentary. And so when I took up when I got inspired to make a documentary about Julian Assange and WikiLeaks, it was just going to be a zero budget YouTube project that would take a few months. I wouldn't have to deal with any licensing because it's all under, you know, fair use. And and it started out that way. And so the first interview that I organized was with Julian's father, John Shipton, down in Melbourne. Jumped on a flight there and interviewed him on my mobile phone, and I forgot to put it in HD. So it was shot in SD on a tripod. I did a terrible job with that. I mean, but funnily, there's a little clip from that that's in the final cut because it was such a good statement, and we thought, even though it was a little bit blurry, we'll put it in. But what happened was, then after that first interview, we're out on the street and I said, "Hey, John, can we get a photo?" And we got a photo on the street, and I put that up on Facebook, and it just went viral. And that sort of showed me that this massive worldwide support and this huge calling for a new documentary about the topic. Documentaries, as you say, are very difficult, challenging to do. You often need funding or a portfolio, some experience. And I didn't have any of that, but I did notice that there was a lot of interest, and you know, so we sort of gradually worked into the project and set up a GoFundMe page after a few weeks into it and started to get some support through that. And it just grew and grew and grew. And within about, I guess, 6 months, we had enough funds to do an animation. And, you know, any funds that came in, I was just so excited to embellish the film and make it much better. Mm. And so we made an animation of the courtroom. I think you've seen the film and you might remember that courtroom animation where Julian's in a bus room at the back of the court. And we shared that on our Twitter once it was done, an excerpt of it. And then Stella Assange, Julian's wife, spotted it and messaged me and said, yeah, I know you've been asking to interview me. Happy to do that. You should come over to London. I'll introduce you to some people. You know, come to Julian's birthday reception event. And when I went there, then I met MIA, the UK rapper, Kristen Atkinson, the current editor-in-chief of WikiLeaks, and many other contacts. And the crowdfunding just went up really fast then once we were getting all these well-known people involved and interviewed. And so it just grew and grew. And then I guess about a year into it, I realized this could be something cinema worthy. But, you know, we just kept going and just kept building it. And it turned out to be not only cinema worthy, but something that's been quite a hit in cinemas so far in Australia, New Zealand.
Yeah. And like our story here in our little town is that I don't think anyone was planning to show it, but people within the community started asking our one theatre, are you going to show it? And they said, well, we'll show anything if you can prove to us that you'll get a crowd. And that happened very quickly. And then the first session is sold out. And you were saying to me off the air earlier that that's quite a common story around the place.
Yeah, I think primarily because of the huge passion and interest and support for Assange globally, amongst the people, the small number that know, that understand the situation and understand this incredible, brave act that Assange did, and the way that he's been persecuted, those small numbers of people are so passionate about it. And over the nearly 3 years of producing the film, we build up a huge social media following, around 50,000 people. And so when we announced it was released, people just started asking their cinemas to show it. And so that's been a big part of how we've had over 200 cinemas show it so far.
Yeah.
And in all kinds of places, in really remote areas. And we haven't yet. We've only just released it 10 days ago in the UK. It came out in cinemas in the UK, and we haven't done the big areas like Europe and the US yet. And so I think we'll have a similar phenomenon there where supporters are quite happy to do some work to suggest it to their local cinemas. There was a terrific, a few really great stories from how that, you know, some examples of that. And there's I'll just share one of them, a lovely Assange supporter in the town of Albury, which is on the border of Victoria and New South Wales. One day, I'd never heard from her at all, and one day I just spotted an article on Google News, which was her standing out the front of her local cinema with a printed A4 poster of our film poster. And so this fantastic woman had basically gone and convinced her local cinema to show the film, and then she'd gone further. She'd organised the local media to do a story, printed off the A4 sheet, and stood out the front of the cinema and did an interview. And she did all this herself, and then she went on to basically fill up those two first sessions with 150 people just by, you know, word of mouth. And you know, there's a lot of interest every time the first session happens in a town or city. The first few sessions usually often book out there if the word gets around. And so, you know, we're looking at having some more sessions there. And there's so many other stories like that. There's another lady down south of Sydney at a town called Bowral the cinema was a bit tough with her. They said, you're going to have to prove to us that you're going to get 300 people. Mm. And so she went, and not to be discouraged, she went and made a list, and she reached out to local community groups and said, who would buy a ticket? And 300 people signed almost like a petition. The cinema finally agreed to run it, Empire Cinema's Barrel. And then they've now had 11, they've had something like 7 sessions and a few more on the board. So by the time they finish that, they'll have had 11 sessions of the film, all with a really good turnout. So it's the local supporters that are sort of demonstrating the interest, and then the cinemas are like often have never heard of Assange or don't understand the story or whatever.
Yeah.
And then when they do put it on, it goes really, really well. Everyone's surprised. But of course, there's also some cinemas where the programmer actually supports Assange and is familiar with the story as well. So we also have support from them.
Yeah, it's interesting to hear. Sorry, I wanted to leap in and just ask a question related to that, which is I had assumed that the corporate media would be not that keen to promote it. Like they haven't really covered his story that well, you could say. But it sounds like that's kind of an irrelevant question now, that people power, for want of a better phrase, is solving the publicity problem.
Yeah, it's well, you know, when WikiLeaks and Assange became so prominent in 2010, and Assange became a household name because they were putting out these massive releases about the United States, the Iraq war logs, Afghan war logs, the diplomatic cables. Then I think around that time, then the mainstream media all started to smear him. They all there was a lot of awful articles, just disgusting defamation going on.
Yeah.
And then it's taken years and years, and now just in the last 2 years, you've started to see a turnaround. And so these big major newspapers, which, by the way, were involved in those WikiLeaks releases, they were putting these stories onto their front page and benefiting from it.
Yeah.
These incredible news around these wars. And so just a couple of years ago, you started to see these big newspapers doing joint letters calling for the freedom of Assange. It's like it took them a decade to realize, this might be a threat to our industry, to our livelihood, to our vocation.
Yeah.
Instead of thinking right from the get-go, they should have said, well, you know, he's a journalist. What are you guys, what's going on? It should have been a big uproar. But instead of that, they sort of did what they were told and smeared him and jumped on that bagwagon of disgusting smear and defamation. And so you are starting to see a turnaround, and you know, there was whenever news develops now, it comes out on all the mainstream and right through the independent news, and it's just there's so much coverage. But you know, with as far as like promoting the film, we've had a fair bit of media, especially in London when we went over there a month ago for the High Court hearing, to attend the protests and to do our London premiere, not the premiere, the preview screening.
Yeah.
As soon as we arrived there, within a few days, we had BBC Global News and Talk TV got me on for TV interviews. Whereas in Australia, and New Zealand, it's been tough to get the really main any of the main media outlets to cover the film as such.
Can I ask about the Australian government? Historically, I guess you could say historically, this has been going on so long, they haven't been that supportive of Julian Assange and what his basic needs as a citizen. I've got the perception that that's been changing with your most recent government, but is that very accurate?
Well, it's the illusion of change, really. It's ever since Julia Gillard was the Australian Prime Minister at the time when Assange started to be persecuted, and she just followed in step with that. She called Assange a criminal, and then couldn't explain how he was a criminal. So that's another example of perpetuated myths. And then it's not until this, about a year and a half ago, with the current Labor government under Albanese, that we start to see sort of this idea of a neutral stance with a bit of optimism thrown in, but it was all a facade. Albanese had this line that enough is enough, it should be brought to a close. It took him 6 months to reiterate that stance in Parliament. And then over the following year, around about a year, he's basically shown that to be a hollow sort of stance. FOI requests late last year revealed that there was very few documents of correspondence between the Australian US government, and what those documents showed was that the Australian government is basically happy for the US to proceed with the extradition for Assange to go on trial, and then perhaps once he's sentenced for this 175-year virtual death sentence, then maybe he can serve some of his time back in Australia. And, so I think what we've seen from the Australian government is been a merry dance along the fence to sort of pacify the Assange supporters and give them this false hope, and then on the other hand keep his head honcho US big bosses happy, and Assange supporters are quite cranky about all this, and it's pathetic on the side of Albanese. He doesn't have guts to stand up to the US on anything. So it's like Australia is just another state of America. It's just appalling, and it's so weak and gutless.
It's pretty similar over here in New Zealand. It's not a lot different. You probably have picked that up. I wanted to ask, I think we're just about running out of time with you, but it's potentially a very dark story, this story. And I was wondering how you handled that, and if you still have a sense of hope at the end of this.
Yeah, this whole situation, the persecution of Assange and the leaks that he revealed, it is very dark. It's awful stuff, but the world needed to see it. Someone had to put it out. And unfortunately, he's suffered the consequences of that, of being that messenger. But I'm an optimistic person. I'm like a mixture of realism and optimism, and the optimistic side of me believes that the people have the power to invoke some sort of democracy out of this and work towards some kind of genuine democracy. And we have to put our minds and heads together to solve this. I do believe that we have the ability to do that over time, but I think there's a lot more awareness needs to occur. People need to firstly understand the issue, understand what's happened, understand the mission and goals of WikiLeaks, that it was towards a peaceful world, and also they need to get past their barriers that the narrative, the false narrative that everyone's been. Most people have been tricked by. We've been fooled into thinking that Assange is the criminal. He's just the one that exposed the real criminals. Yeah. And so if people can take the time to watch this film, a two-hour documentary, you can walk in with no knowledge or maybe confusion, or you're on the fence about all this, and you will, I think 99% of people will walk out being 100% convinced that there's something incredibly wrong going on here against this journalist. And it's just by looking at the facts, it's so important for us to do that, because it's all of our futures are intertwined here, and the future freedoms of future generations.
Yeah, and can we just check in how Julian is at the moment? I know his health has taken quite a toll on his health.
Yeah, like anyone in those conditions would find it very hard to maintain any kind of health, and he's had a stroke about a year ago. His left eyelid droops. He has terrible bouts of depression, and he's isolated. He barely gets to see his family, his two young boys. He's kept in solitary confinement 22 hours a day, coming up to 5 years, with no idea of what lies ahead in the future. I think anyone with a heart can imagine that this is a terrible situation that would be very hard psychologically to endure.
Yeah.
But he's a very strong-willed character. He's determined, and he stays strong amidst all of this, amidst the health problems. He's often heavily medicated. He wasn't well enough to appear at his own trial a month ago in London. So it's terrible suffering, and anyone should be able to look at this and go, well, this is just completely wrong, and his, you know, human rights are being violated on a day-to-day basis.
Yeah, yeah. Look, Kim, thanks heaps for your time. Very nice of you to talk to us and our little community when you've been to London and all these other places with this film, and I wish you all the best with pushing it out to the rest of the world.
My pleasure, Aaron. Thanks for having me, and thanks for your interest in this important topic.